We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm your host, Patricia Karpis. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who have devoted their lives to teaching and helping others through meditation. In today's episode, I interview Kara Bradley. Kara is an author, yoga and mindfulness teacher, and mental strength coach for college athletes. She integrates mindfulness practices with mental strength training for football and basketball players and shares many of the strategies and practices she uses with these athletes. Her book, On the Verge, highlights how to experience high definition, high voltage living on purpose every day. Before we begin, don't forget to check out Meditation Studio app in the iTunes App Store. And if you have suggestions for future guests, email me at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. Now, here's Kara. Kara, welcome to Untangle.
Thanks, Patricia. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm most interested in your mental strength training and how you use mindfulness in that. And I know that there's, you know, those words resonate in almost everything that you do. But tell me a little bit about how you got into this, what you're calling mental strength training. And let's, tell us a little bit about what is that?
Sure. Well, firstly, I'll just backtrack just a little bit to say that I've been an athlete my whole life, and I started out as a figure skater. And I was one of those intense figure skaters that would get up before school and be on the ice. And we used to do something called figures back then, which they don't have to do anymore. But I had a patch of ice, and I had this big metal thing called a scribe. And the scribe would make a figure eight, and then I had to draw the figure eight on my blade on an edge. So from a young age, I was really enthralled with this, the kind of subtle distinctions of shifting body, mind, the whole thing. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was meditating on the ice. So fast forward, I became a runner. And so I've always had this, just this deep, deep love for how the mind and body connect. And when I started to teach yoga and practice meditation myself, I saw just the parallels of how it really was so similar to being a figure skater or a runner. And so when I started to train athletes, using yoga as a modality back about 13 years ago, I recognized that once I got athletes into yoga poses, I could help them to really understand and untangle their mind in a way that would help them understand how they were playing on the field. So what we could do in a yoga practice, in a mindfulness training, we could then apply during competition. So because I was training football players, I had 90 football players and me, it's a blast. But I am also a strength coach, certified strength and conditioning specialist in the world of college athletics. That's really important. So I just started calling myself a mental strength coach because I wasn't in the weight room with the guys, but I was conditioning them. So from the mind.
Where did you get that ability to so focus so intently and to have that discipline? I mean, did that come from your family? Did you have mentors, inspiration? Where did that come from?
Gosh, that's a great question. And I really didn't have mentors helping me along the way. And I think it's why my journey was so jagged and up and down, because I kind of was just figuring this out and making a whole lot of mistakes on my own.
So you grew up as an athlete, and then you get into yoga, but in between you become an investment banker. And talk a little bit about that jagged path, and then let's get into some of the gritty stuff around the mental strength training with the football teams.
Sure. Well, I was in my 20s living in New York City, and I became an investment banker. I went to NYU for business and was hired and was there in the mid-80s on Wall Street, and realized that quickly I needed to move my body for a living. I just couldn't do it. It wasn't for me. It was a great job. It wasn't for me. And so I got back on my skates, but it was when rollerblading started to hit the scene in New York. So being a figure skater, it was natural for me. I started teaching rollerblading in Central Park. And then I got super involved in that. But it was after my first daughter was born, now 22 years ago, that I started to seriously practice yoga.
And was that the beginning of where you are right now in terms of you're doing yoga and mindfulness for the football players?
Correct.
Was that, so you start to get into yoga, and then what inspires you to take it to this next level of being with the athletes?
Well, you know, it's so interesting how these things work. And one of the things that I often, when I'm teaching, you know, I guide people to really listen carefully, because the messages are there, and oftentimes we feel it in our bodies before we ever recognize what it is in our mind, or we can put two and two together. So I was teaching yoga, and I had just decided to start to open a yoga center. I'm outside of Philadelphia now. And a friend of mine told me, a good friend of mine said, "Hey, I just started training the University of Delaware football team. Do you want to come and, you know, assist me?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's really cool." So I went down, and immediately, as soon as he started teaching, I was like, "Oh my God, I have to do this. This so is up my alley." And so that day I went home and emailed the Villanova football coach, because we're close to Villanova, immediately got a response. The next morning I was sitting across a table with him at a diner talking about how to implement this program. So, I mean, it was just one of those things. I just knew it. I acted on it. And it's amazing when we really listen.
So you started teaching yoga and mindfulness to these football players. And you said you had a blast and you loved it. But, you know, you've got, there are two things going on here. One is these are college students, and two is their football players. And I know you've taught basketball players too. And I just, you know, I wonder what motivates them to stay present with your teaching, other than them, the coaches saying, you know, you need to do this. But what happens in this training that makes it effective from your perspective?
It's a great question. So firstly, the yoga is very simple. So it's got to stay super simple because you're moving 90 bodies and they're all different sizes, which is amazing in itself. And they're, you know, 18 to 22-year-old college guys who played a game the day before because I train them on Sundays after their game. So they're coming in either high or low. I keep things really simple and speak very deliberately to them, very deliberately to their bodies. And you know, it's amazing, and you know this as well, Patricia, that you get yourself breathing in a rhythm and everything settles. And then all of a sudden, there's just this sense of clarity and openness. So I feel like in the first 10 or 15 minutes, I get them moving and breathing in a way that just allows them to receive what I have to say. And then we get to work mentally. Then I'm holding them in poses, say a standing frog, right? So your feet are apart, your toes are turned out, you're leaning on your thighs, and I'm holding them. And I'm holding them and breathing them to focus on their breath and to notice when doubt arises, to notice what it feels like in their body, because we're simulating being physically uncomfortable in competition. Now, it's not exactly like competition, but it's enough to really get these guys to start to understand, wow, I can notice it here. So when it arises out there, I am better equipped to move beyond it and not get sucked up into it.
One of the things that I really loved about your book, On the Verge, is that the language is so accessible, and you talk about it in terms of there are strategies and there are practices. And so I'm wondering, too, if your style and your ability to really connect with the athletes, because you are an athlete, makes it more accessible for them, too.
Totally. Yeah. And I had two brothers, and my brothers were hockey players. And so I grew up in a household of, you know, little masculine energy. So I think I could bring on that, you know, that directness, and in a way that, you know, the guys listen.
What kind of questions do they ask you? Do they ever, you know, come up afterwards, and do you have any, you know, success stories or stories where someone just walked out because it wasn't for them?
I have one story with one of the basketball players, because I work with the Villanova basketball team as well. And Jay Wright, you know, they were national champions this year. So it was such a thrill. And I'm such a fan of Phil Jackson, George Mumford. I know I listened to his talk with you. It was great. So, I mean, I love that world, and getting into the minds of athletes is just, it's so much fun. But I had this one athlete, few years ago. He was a basketball player, and he was having trouble just, you know, with consistency on the foul line. And so he started to say to himself before he took a shot, fierce focus. And it's a term that I use a lot when I'm working with athletes, fierce focus. And, you know, it was just a mantra. I mean, we didn't call it a mantra, but it was a mantra. You know, it kind of helped him anchor his mind, settle his mind so that he can really access his physical intelligence. And it really helped him.
So this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. We talk about these often on Untangle. When we keep things bottled up inside, it can start to impact our health mentally, emotionally, and physically. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, whatever it is. If this sounds like you, and it's a bit of all of us, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule and needs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now, over to Untangle.
Was that's a technique that you use, giving them an anchor saying, if you will, sure, to help them focus. So I want to understand, because I felt like a lot of the concepts from your book are great concepts for everyday life, you know, just how we live and how we become more mindful and compassionate people, as well as, you know, on the field, whether it's a basketball court or the football field. And when you talk about being 100% engaged and that being what makes us feel fully alive. How is it that we get to that place when we live in such a sort of cluttered, noisy world?
I feel like, you know, if I could be so cliche as to say, life is not a spectator sport. You know, we want to be in the game. I want to be in the game. And so what do I need to do? And these are the questions I ask myself all the time. You know, what do I need to do to really experience my life? I don't want to miss it. Like, I want a full-on experience of this shot I've got, you know? So that's really what's led me on my own journey, is this sense of feeling fully alive. And it's really just my way of saying being present, right? Because, you know, present doesn't land for everybody. So we have to approach this, as we all know, from many different angles so that we're able to connect with different folks. So fully alive is one of the words that I use a lot when I train and teach people. And so, yeah, how do we feel fully alive? Well, you know, here's a question I have for you, Patricia, and it's a question I ask for a lot of people. What makes you feel fully alive? Like, is there a place or a thing that you do or a time of the day that makes you feel alive?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, I saw some of those exercises in your book and I was tempted to go through them. And, you know, I think for me, it's things that are new and adventurous and animals and children. But you're right. It's being fully present to what I'm doing when what I'm doing is making me happy. And that was another question I had for you, which is, you know, do we want to be 100% engaged all the time, or are there times where it's better? Like, you talk about sticky situations, and I think of, you know, dealing with conflict and really like sort of tough times. Do we want to be present, or is it okay to sort of mute some of those experiences?
Well, it's definitely easier to mute, isn't it? You know, I think that there can be a gentle allowing in all moments. And I know, you know, I deal with this a lot because I run a business and I have teachers and students, and you know, it's 7 days a week and it's 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. And so I'm always on. And so I recognize myself. I can't always be there. I can't always be fully engaged all the time, available and ready, you know, otherwise we're just kind of hijacked and by, you know, and stressed out all the time. But there's this sense of allowing, just allowing life to ebb and flow and recognizing that it's not always going to be comfortable. It's not always going to be convenient. And I know, you know, Tara Brach has a beautiful saying, this too. You know, this too. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but I say it to myself all the time. You know, when a sticky situation arises, something's happening at work, or, you know, I'm in a traffic jam, it's like, oh, okay, this too. Can I allow myself to be in this moment? Because this is my life right now. I commute it, but then I'm going to miss it. And so.
Yeah. You know, you talk about the ways that we opt out that are unhealthy. I love your words of, you know, when our brain gets sloppy or we're just crazy busy, which everybody is crazy busy, and we get on autopilot and we feel completely overloaded. And what are some of the practices that you use with your students and, you know, your athletes to help to sort of mitigate these states?
Yeah, so we are all crazy busy. I mean, we all have undisciplined minds. It's just, you know, our cultural conditioning. And so from my own meditation practice and study, I have developed language to support everyday people that maybe don't even realize meditation could be something that would be good for them. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I kind of go through the back door. I'm a sneaky teacher in that respect. So when I'm teaching yoga, I'm helping them to become familiar with their mind, which is really the definition in many ways of meditation, is to become familiar with how our mind operates. So in a yoga practice, or even during a talk, I try to help people to recognize what it feels like to be stuck in a busy mind, and maybe to experience or to notice the experience when we just allow ourselves to be in the moment. So there's a really different visceral feeling of when we're present and when we're stuck in our busy minds. And so I love helping people to start to recognize that, oh yes, when I'm at the beach, that's when I feel really open and spacious and I'm just more joyful. Wow, that must be what it feels like to be present. Or when I'm at work and I'm, you know, dealing in a meeting and I'm not getting my way and I feel tight and my throat clenches and my stomach gets knotty, that's what it feels like to be stuck in, you know, controlling. So just to start to recognize this, this is like the big aha. It's like, wow, I can be so many different things. What is this all about? And how do I be present more often? Because that feels a lot better.
Well, I like that you use the word stuck. And I think, you know, that goes back to your unblock, unfold, unleash, because what you're talking about a lot is the habitual behaviors that we have. And we often, until we're trained in some of these methods, we don't stop, we don't pause, we don't kind of reconsider another way we might want to behave. So I think it's really great that you're doing that and that you're especially doing it with a lot of these young athletes that probably wouldn't ever go on their own to learn yoga or mindfulness practices. So you're with each of these teams that you've helped over the last 12 years, your impact has probably been exponential.
Well, I'd like to hope so, you know.
No, that's really, it's fantastic. You talk about attitudes that you want people to engage in. Will you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. We come into these practices and these disciplines and these sports that are supposed to make us feel healthy and joyful and inspired, but we spend so much of the time just berating ourselves and judging ourselves and comparing and competing. And so at just having the right attitudes, and it's something I learned from my meditation teachers, is always coming to our practice with right attitude, with an attitude of kindness and patience towards yourself, with an attitude of non-judgment, just to allow, yourself to go through the process of learning with being a beginner, always a beginner, the freshness, coming back to your practices with an attitude of freshness and curiosity. Some of these simple attitudes, even if you're doing the same yoga pose or you're going to the same spin class or whatever it is you do, you know, we can come to our practices with these light attitudes that just lighten us up, right? They unleash us from all the blocks and the binds and the patterns that we get stuck in so often. There's that word stuck again.
Exactly. Well, you're a good guide. You know, I think people have different experiences when they go into a yoga class, and sometimes they resonate with the teacher, sometimes they don't. And it's just lovely to be so in touch with your students and be able to help them through a transformation, whether it's, you know, of the day that they've had or of their lives. So, you know, I think that's a gift that you clearly have to share. Have you done silent meditation retreats?
Yes.
I'd love to hear about that. I've interviewed a few people, and I love their stories. And I did my first silent retreat this year, and I kept expecting the same things to happen to me that had happened to the people that I interviewed. So I'm super curious about different people's experiences on these silent retreats.
Oh my goodness. You know, I get such a kick out of myself. I mean, at this point, we're really funny. When we get silent, it's actually so much fun to watch yourself and all your patterns. So my funny story is my first silent retreat was a long weekend up at Insight Meditation Society, IMS, up in Barre, Massachusetts, and a very strict schedule. So it's, you know, you're sitting for 40 and then you're up and walking for 20 and you're sitting for 40 and you're up and walking for 20 and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And I remember they had this little piece of paper outside the meditation hall with that schedule. And after every session, I would run up and look at the schedule. And it was like, I realized how addicted I am to having my schedule. And all it said was sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, lunch, sit, walk, sit, walk, sit, walk, dinner.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, gosh. And you loved it. You were curious about your own reactions to things.
Yeah, I mean, it was not easy. The first minute silent meditation retreat. Yeah, but now I just long for them. I long for the silence.
Yes, I completely understand. So is there anything else that you'd like to share about the work that you do?
I see such tremendous potential in human beings. I see it every day when I teach. I see the brilliance and the intelligence that we have and the capacity to connect with one another and to be creative. And I'm so inspired by the students that I get to teach that it keeps me hungry to learn how to continue to hold space for people so that they can connect with their own brilliance and start to really believe in the brilliance that we all have. I know one of my meditation teachers, Michael Carroll, you know, he often says, there is no better version of you out there. You know, it's a matter of getting quiet enough to recognize that the best version of yourself is emerging in this next moment. And there it is. Yeah.
That's such a beautiful way to end. Kara, thank you so much. I love this book, On the Verge, and we're going to let people know how to get it. And I just am so grateful to you for taking the time to do this interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patricia. It's been such an honor.
Thanks so much to Kara, and thank you all for listening. We look forward to sharing more inspiring stories next week. Be sure to check out Kara at karabradley.net. And check out her book, On the Verge. It's available at all major booksellers. Once again, if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio App in the App Store. See you next time.